911, what are you reporting?
I got a strange going on out here. Something just killed my dog.
Something killed your dog?
My dog went flying through the air over the tree. I don't know how it did it.
Okay.
Damn it, I'm really confused. All I saw was my dog coming over the fence, and he was dead when she hit the ground. I didn't see any cars. All I saw was my dog coming over the fence.
What are you reporting?
We got someone or something crawling around out here.
Did you see what it was?
There was. It was standing up. I'm out here looking through the window now and I don't see anything. I don't want to go outside. Jesus Christ, you better...
Sheriff?
Dia!
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6 foot nine, I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Uh-oh.
Hey, everybody. This is Les Stroud. Yes, yes, I know. A.K.A. Survival Man. And you're listening to Brian, Sasquatch Odyssey.
Hey guys, and welcome to this week's episode of Sasquatch Odyssey. Thank you guys so much for being with us for the show. It is finally Friday. I hope you guys are having a great week. We've got an amazing guest lined up for you, but as always, I want to start the show by inviting you. If you've had an encounter and you'd like to be on the show, shoot me an email. You can give me a brian@sasquatchodyssey.net. You can head over to the website, check out our Patreon, become a member there, and help support the show. As I said, we've got a great guest lined up for you. We've got Chris on from my home state of North Carolina, and he's got some really interesting stories to share, and I'll let him tell those in just a moment. Before we get there, I just want to ask you one more time, if you guys wouldn't mind, just taking a few seconds and rating and reviewing the show wherever you listen. If you're on Apple Podcasts, you can rate and you can leave us a review. I would really appreciate it. It goes a long way in helping people find the show. I know you guys are ready to get over to the show, but before we do, if you wouldn't mind taking a couple of seconds and checking out our Patreon page, there's plenty of tiers over there that you can sign up for. You get extended audio, a couple of shows coming up over the next couple of weeks. I've got some extended audio and video. So if you're into that sort of thing, check out Patreon. You can become a member there and help support the show. Without further ado, I'm not going to do a whole lot of talking. I'm just going to let the music play. You guys sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. I want to welcome our guest to the show. It's Chris from North Carolina. Welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thank you, Brian. I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely, man. I've been excited to talk to you. So I know you got some experiences to share in my home state of North Carolina. So why don't you just walk us into it, man? Take us back to where you were, what you were doing, and what happened to you.
Well, first, I'd like to say, you know, I was probably the world's biggest skeptic when I, you know, before this ever happened. And, you know, I was a volunteer firefighter in the town of Troy, North Carolina. And, you know, we're right there in the URA National Forest. You know, I've heard all my life of people having sightings and experiences in the National Forest up there. So we got a call one day that there was an Animal Planet show coming to the URA National Forest to do the Finding Bigfoot episode. They actually did it at our fire station, is where they did their town hall meeting. And, you know, I was going to go up there and laugh at all the nuts and, you know how it is. But I ended up getting the flu, so I didn't get to go that night. But, you know, afterwards, everybody was talking about, oh, these people were saying they were seeing Bigfoot in the National Forest. And I was like, yeah, whatever, you know. I've hunted, fished all my life. You know, I've been in the woods since I was a kid and never seen anything, never heard anything, none of that stuff. You know, it was just, it was as far from my mind as you could even imagine it would be. I ended up as I've gotten older, I've took up the hobby of gold panning. Me and one of them, you know, the URA National Forest up there is full of gold. It's all like flower gold is what they call it. You know, it's real fine particles. But there's plenty in the creeks up there. You know, you can go and mess around. It's fun to do with the kids, you know, stuff like that. I got into that, and I was getting pretty good at it. You know, I was starting to find a little gold here and there. And a guy came up to me at church one day, and he said, Chris, don't you do a little gold panning? I said, yeah, I tinker with it some. You know, it's not. You know, I'm not trying to get rich off of it, but I mean, it's a hobby. I enjoy doing it. He said, well, why don't you come down to my house and come check my creek and see if there's any gold in it. I said, okay, yeah, you know, I'll come down there one day. I don't know when I'll get to come down there. You know, I had kids playing sports and, you know, with my job and all that. I wasn't really sure when I would get to go down there. But he said, yeah, that's fine. Just whenever you get a chance. So, I got to doing some research before I ever went down there, and supposedly upstream from his land, there was a gold mine up there in like the 1890s or something, you know. And I thought, well, it might be a good chance of finding some gold in this creek. So I ended up getting off work early one day, and I drove down there. I went past his house, and this is kind of southwest of the town of Troy. It's in a little community called Thickety Creek. It's kind of between Troy, North Carolina, Mount Gilead, North Carolina, out in the country. It's very, very rural out there. So I went down there, went by his house. He wasn't home. So I pulled on down. He's got about 350 acres, I think, out there. It had been logged about 20 years ago, something like that. So there were still some roads, like logging roads and stuff in there. And where the power company comes in and cuts the power lines out, you know, keeps it all clear. So I went down in there, and where the log trucks used to come out, he's got a gate up there now. So I parked at the gate. I got all my stuff off the back of the truck and crossed his fence and was walking down what used to be the old logging road, you know, where the trucks came in and out. And that's about knee high in grass. And anybody that knows that area knows is swarming with timber rattlers down there. And in that area, they are huge. So I always, you know, I take my 9mm with me when I go. And so I'm walking down the road, I'm going kind of slow, you know, looking at the ground, making sure I'm not, you know, running into snakes, you know, any of that kind of stuff. And just to give you an idea of the landscape, as you're walking down this road, I wouldn't even know what kind of grade to call it, but it's a pretty steep mountain to your right side, and the creek is on the left side. It's got maybe 4-foot banks, something like that, and the creeks and the runs in the bottom of it. So as I'm walking down this road, you know, of course, I'm looking for snakes. I'm looking at this creek, trying to find a clear place to get down in the creek without having to go through all the heavy brush, you know, knowing that those snakes are down there like that. I walk in there 150, 200 yards, something like that. And there's a kind of a flat, clear place to get into the creek. So I thought, hey, there's my spot. So I walk down in, get in the creek, and there's a huge rock in there. It's probably about the size of a Volkswagen. You know, it's a huge flat rock in there. And, you know, my way of thinking was, hey, that'd make a good workbench, you know, workstation. So I get down in there and I put all my stuff on top of that rock, you know, to keep it all dry, my backpack and stuff. I start digging rocks, you know, having fun, just doing, you know, I enjoy doing it. It's like, you know, it's more than a hobby. It's, you know, I really enjoy it. So I'm down in there doing that, washing some rocks and stuff. And I've been there for maybe a couple of hours, 2 hours or so. And I always take a 2-liter soft drink bottle, and I fill it with water and freeze it. And I set it on, you know, I had it sitting on that rock melting. And as it melts, you know, you got cold water to drink while you're there. So I worked a couple of hours, and I thought, I'm going to take a break. You know, it gets rough on your back, you know, shoveling rocks and all that. So I'm standing there drinking water, and I hear something come flying through the trees over my head. You know, it's hitting limbs, hitting leaves as it's coming through the treetops. And I'm standing there drinking water, and I'm like, you know, I've never heard birds do that. I've never heard a bird come through a treetop, you know, hitting limbs and stuff. But I didn't see what it was. I just heard it. So I'm standing there, you know, scratching my head, thinking, you know, that was pretty odd. I'm looking around, you know, my first thought was acorns falling. And I look around, I'm standing in pine trees, so it wasn't acorns. By that time, I hear something coming through the woods again, bam, 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 you know, hitting limbs, hitting tree, you know, hitting leaves and stuff as it's coming through. And I look up this time and I catch it in my eye. It's coming from my left to my right. I look up and I see it, and it's a rock about the size of a junior size football. And it's coming through the treetops, over probably, you know, 15 feet over my head. And it lands on the other side of the creek with a thud on the bank on the other side. You know, like I said, you know, I'm standing there trying to go through my mind, what in the world can throw rocks like that? I know my friend's not home. He's not going to be down there throwing rocks that big anyway. There's no, you know, I can't think of anybody that could throw a rock that far. I'm sorry, man. I'm shaking. I'm shaking telling the story. But so, I mean, my first thing to come out of my mouth was, if you stay over there, I'll stay over here. Don't know why I said that, but that's what I said. So I get all my stuff together and I unsnap the holster on my 9mm and I've got my hand on it and I'm walking out of the woods and I ain't thinking about any snakes this time. You know, I'm trying to get back to my truck. The whole time I'm walking back to the truck, you know, it feels like something's watching me. Now, I haven't heard anything. I hadn't seen anything, hadn't smelled anything, any of that stuff. So as I'm walking back to my truck, I've got my hand on my pistol. And not that it's going to do any good if I have to shoot something, you know, but, you know, maybe it'll scare them anyway. So I get back to my truck and I throw my backpack in the back of my truck and I walk around the truck and I look back at the woods and it's like the trees are like a tidal wave and they're going to consume me. You know what I mean? It was just that feeling, like that weird, just, I don't know. I don't even know how to explain it. It's just weird. Like something was there and it was, you know, it was paying attention to me. So I get in the truck and I leave. I take a left and go up the next road to the next stop sign. And when I get there, I am shaking and I am like, my mind is not working. And I just have to sit there a minute and just, you know, take a minute and try to get my thoughts together and get myself together so I can drive. So it went on. And I left, went on back home for whatever reason. It was like, I immediately hid it in the back of my mind. Like I didn't tell anybody. I mean, how do you tell somebody that, you know, how do you tell, you know, your friend, hey, something's down there throwing rocks at me. And at the very least, I might've mentioned it to my wife. I don't even know if I did that, but that was in about 2012, 2013. And I mean, I'm recently just now to the point where I can even talk about it even now. But since then I've had a couple of other things that happened, you know, that have really made me think, you know, maybe there's something to this Sasquatch thing. I, you know, maybe all these people are not crazy, or maybe I am crazy. I don't know. You know, it's just a weird place to be, you know, in your mind at that time. There was another time, me and my cousin, you know, we're like brothers, we're like 9 months apart in age, you know, so we've always been real close since we were kids. And we were down not far from that same area. Little river runs through there. It's a real small river, but I mean, it's pretty good fishing. So we, you know, we used to fish down there a lot. It's close to home, close to town. You know, you can shoot down there in the afternoon after work. You got plenty of fishing. It's fun, you know? So we were down there fishing one day and this is not very far, you know, the way the crow flies, it's not very far through the woods from where this first encounter happened. And we were trolling up the edge of the river fishing. And all of a sudden, this big, huge rock comes out of the trees and splash at the back of the boat where I'm sitting. I mean, it's big enough it splashes me. And I said, man, did you hear that? He said, yeah, what was that? He said, that must have been one of these big catfish. I said, no, man, that was a rock. I saw it come out of the trees. You know, in that area, there's, I think one guy has a camper down there. And another guy lives in a pretty big house, but he's way up on top of the mountain. So, I mean, there's, and it's grown up, you know, it's thick, snake infested. Nobody's down there throwing rocks at us while we're fishing. So, I mean, you know, these things, they're just hard to explain. So I had another third one was, I was with the same cousin who refuses to talk about any of this to this day. He still will not talk about it. He was hunting 4 miles up past my house in a little hunting area he had leased up there. He called me one night. He said, man, I shot a big 11 pointer. He said, you mind coming up here and help me look for it? I said, no, I'll come help you, you know. So I grabbed my flashlight, grabbed my rifle, and we went up there. And we found where the deer went in the woods. And you could tell it would stop and it would lay down. And then you could see where it would get up and run again. And we walked through the woods probably probably close to an hour trying to track this deer.
Stay tuned for more Sasquatch Odyssey. We'll be right back after these messages.
We hear coyotes to the left of us down at the bottom of Jenny Wright Mountain. It's the name of a mountain right there in the Uray National Forest. We can hear coyotes at the base of that mountain down in the holler. You know, they're down there yelping and howling and all that. And then we hear something coming from our right. From our right, there's another creek back in there. There's no way coyotes could cross that creek coming from that way. And something is coming from the bottom of the hill up towards us. And it sounds like a train coming through the woods. It's not really making a lot of noise other than you can hear it like brushing trees and pulling limbs down. And it is tearing the woods up, coming up that hill to us. And it probably gets right out of flashlight range, you know, in those woods. And you can hear it standing there and it's going, like breathing heavy, like it's tired from coming up that hill. You know, my cousin said, "What the F is that?" I said, "I have no idea, but I think it's time for us to go." So we left the woods back to back. You know, I had my flashlight out the back and my rifle up, and he's looking out the front, and we walk out of the woods like that, back to back, all the way out of the woods. And like I said, to this day, he still will not even mention that ever happened.
Did you guys ever find the deer?
No, we never found the deer. We found another spot in the leaves where you could tell it had laid down, but you couldn't see like hoof prints where it got back up and ran again. So you tell me where it went. I have no idea.
Well, I asked that specifically because I've talked to people and I've heard so many stories about hunters that have shot deer and they're out tracking them and then they just disappear. Or there's even been stories, obviously, where people have seen Sasquatch come up and throw a deer over its shoulder and take off with it, you know, so.
Right.
And I'm not saying that what happened. Obviously, we're speculating. We don't know what happened, but I asked that specifically about the deer because, you know, it is a possibility, right? You got to ask the question.
Right. And, you know, we had a good blood trail and then all of a sudden it stops and there's no deer. Well, I mean, the deer should be laying there and it's not. So.
Well, I want to go back to the first incident and the second incident with the rock throwing, right? Because I've talked to so many people around the Uray National Forest. I've had Bobby on the show. I've had Lee on the show, who's from there. And Lee reached out to me the other day and actually said he wanted to come back on the show because he'd had some new experiences and some other things that had went on since I had him on last year. And that's one of the things that comes out of the Uray often is rock throwing.
Right.
And I don't know if it's not necessarily I haven't really seen a correlation with certain parts of the country because it's across the country. It's everywhere with these things, right? But I think it's very interesting that you've had two experiences and three experiences, two out of the three involved rock throwing. And obviously that was, you said the first one was back in like 2012, 2013. Let me ask you this. Have you had an opportunity to sort of look into the subject? Obviously, it wasn't on your radar before when you thought all these crazies were coming to town with finding Bigfoot.
Right.
And then you have these experiences. Let me ask you, and this is one of the questions I ask often to people. What do you think is going on with the rock throwing? What do you think that is? Do you think it's a territorial thing? Are you convinced that it was a Sasquatch? Because I don't know what else is in the woods that has thumbs that can throw and chunk a rock. But
exactly.
You tell me, you had the experience.
Well, now that I think back on it, I wonder if the area where I got down in the creek when I was going to do some gold panning, you know, I think the area where I got down in the creek was probably the clearest area to get down to the water. So possibly, I think if he wanted to hit me, he could have. Maybe he was just trying to make me leave so he could get to the water. I don't know.
Yeah, it's clearly speculation, right? And the question is not even really fair, but some people have had some different answers, you know. And I had a conversation recently with somebody who I was talking about people who say they know things about Bigfoot and why they do what they do. I tend to stay away from that because anybody who comes up with that is usually on the verge of or has already crossed over that line of demarcation of being full of shit, for lack of a better term. So, you know, the speculation is obviously there because we all speculate about these things. And I tend to think that the rock throwing is a couple of things. If it is a Sasquatch doing it, and these things do exist, I think they're doing it, A, because they're territorial and you're somewhere where they want to be or somewhere that they don't want you to be. And that's the sign to say, you need to go. Or sometimes it's a curiosity thing, because we know, I just had this conversation, you and I were talking before we went on the air, about the conversation I had with Levi Makovic, the author of The Sasquatch Paradox. And that's one of the things that we talked about, was this rock throwing thing and why they do it. And Levi is he takes a very scientific approach to this subject. And the one thing he said to me was, the short answer is on the rock throwing is, I don't know. You know, the safe and short answer is, I don't know. And of course, I said, that's the perfect answer. It's a very political answer, right? I don't know. But he says, I go into the research and I look at other primates. Chimpanzees throw rocks. Gorillas sometimes throw rocks. It is a innate primate thing for them to throw rocks. So if we believe that Sasquatch is real, and we believe that Sasquatch is real, and we believe that it's some sort of a primate, then that behavior makes sense on a lot of levels. And then you could do correlations between, okay, well, why do chimpanzees throw rocks? Well, maybe that's why these things are throwing rocks. And I've also had people tell me stories that they're chunking these big rocks. If they're the size of a junior football, if that thing hits you in the head, you're done, dude. That's the end of the story, like, right? It's lights out.
Well, like I said, I think if it wanted to hit me, it could have. You know, I mean, the only thing I could come up with is maybe I was somewhere it wanted to be, and it wanted me to go so it could get down. I mean, I don't know. Nobody's experts, no matter what they say.
Definitely not, man. So you're up around the Uwari National Forest area. Since these experiences and things that you've had going on, are people talking more about it up in that area? Are you sort of hearing more stories, or people having more sightings or things going on? Or is that more like it is in certain pockets of other places in North Carolina, where it's more isolated and it's just a smaller group of people?
I think that people are talking about it more than they used to. I think a lot of people would keep it in just for the simple fact of somebody like me calling them a crazy, you know. But yeah, I think people are talking more about it. I think it's more mainstream now to talk about it than it's ever been. I mean, you know, like I said, I was a staunch critic. You know, there's no way I was as big a skeptic you've ever known. Now, I don't know. I just don't know.
Well, yeah, when you have those kind of experiences where something's throwing rocks at you, I've said it often about the rocks, you know, the tree structures and the other things that are sort of attributed to Bigfoot and Bigfoot behavior. And people say, well, this tree structure was made by Bigfoot. I've talked about it here on the property before. I found things that I think are strange that could be natural occurrences. They don't look natural to me, but it could be. But that is a very subjective thing. If a bunch of trees are in an area, it could be snowfall. It could be, you know, all kinds of things that causes trees to fall in the forest. And you don't necessarily have to see it or be there for it to happen. It's going to happen, and then you happen upon it, and it looks weird. I don't go to, hey, a Bigfoot made that, because it could be anything. But when you're in the woods or you're in a boat fishing and rocks are being chunked at you in the middle of the woods where there's no other people, either they're falling out of the sky, you're making it up, or you're crazy. Those are really the only three options outside of it being a person or a Sasquatch, right?
Right. And that's the reason that, you know, until now, I haven't told anybody other than, you know, my cousin who was with me, and he won't even talk about it now. But I think I hid it back in my mind when that first happened. And I mean, it was affecting me. I was ill all the time. I was stressed. You know, I had anxiety, and that's the only thing I can contribute it to. I was holding that in, and I didn't feel like I could tell anybody. I felt like I was, you know, on a deserted island by myself. But, you know, so, I mean, this is like therapeutic to me, because I can actually tell it. And I know that people have been through the same thing as me. And, you know, it does so much good just to get it off your chest. That first encounter I had, I did find out that that land was for sale. And I made a point to make myself go back down there. I went down there, I asked the guy, I said, I know your land's for sale. Can I go and do some more gold painting before you sell it? He said, sure, come on down here. So I went on down. And at that time, I didn't have gold painting on my mind. You know, I was going down to see if I could find some footprints, or see if I could find something, you know, something to convince myself that it really happened. And I ended up finding a little bitty gold nugget. And I took it to the guy's house, And you know, I thought, you know, this is my chance to maybe bring it up, you know, bring the subject up to him and see if he's heard anything, you know, kind of like a Goodwill gift or something, I guess. But I went up and talked to him. He said he's never heard anything, never, you know, it had been years since he had even deer hunted on that land. So, I mean, they never really even went out there anymore. But yeah, I did report that one to the BFRO a couple years ago, and the guy called me. We talked about it. He was wanting to get back on the land, you know, and try to do like a overnight investigation or something. And I got in touch with the lady that owns the land now, and she just kept putting me off. And I've known this lady, you know, most of my life, most of my adult life anyway. And I mean, she wasn't interested. So,
yeah, I had that written down. I was writing notes as you were talking and telling the first story. And I wrote down, did you go back and have a conversation with the guy? Because I know that's got to be a difficult situation, right? You're in a situation where you've had this weird experience on somebody's property and you want to know, well, have you had the same experience or have you experienced anything like this? But at the same time, if you bring it up and they haven't, then they think you're crazy. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's kind of it's a rock and a hard place, literally, that you're in to ask more questions and get more information. Because I think I've talked about it before, you know, shows like Finding Bigfoot and even Monster Quest and other shows and shows like this, obviously, that thousands of people listen to every week have done a lot to bring Sasquatch sort of into the mainstream. So people aren't as hesitant to talk about it or, you know, there's more people that believe in it than did maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago. So it's a little bit easier to talk to people about it and they don't scoff, because I think one of the things that's done it is you can't drive around. We're in Lenoir, North Carolina, and you can't drive around here. You can't go to Morganton or, you know, Hickory, 40 minutes away. And I don't pass at least three cars, one of which had a sticker from Sasquatch Odyssey on the back of the truck. You know, which was a pretty cool thing to see, but you see these Bigfoot stickers on the back of the cars and I Believe stickers and things like that. So I think it's a really good thing. I think those shows have done a couple of different things, and probably even this show does good and harm in some ways, you know, depending on how you look at it and who's listening. But in general, I think just having that conversation out in the zeitgeist and people being able to have that conversation openly and put a Bigfoot sticker on their car and let people drive by goes a long way in allowing people like you who would never come forward and talk about it before to do that now. So I appreciate you coming on and trusting me enough with your story to tell it here, because I do think it does a lot of good for the people that are going to hear it, because I guarantee you there's 50 to 100 or if not more people that are going to hear this and say, I've had the exact same thing happen to me in another state or maybe right around the corner from you. Who knows?
Right. I appreciate you having a place where we can come and tell our stories and not have to worry about whether people believe us or not, because I'm at the point now where I don't care if people believe me or not. It happened. And, you know, I'm just recently coming to the point where I can even talk about it and tell people about it, you know, and I still feel odd around some people, but.
And that's the whole purpose of the show, is to give people a space where they don't feel crazy. And it doesn't matter if people believe. I get that all the time. You know, I try not to read the comments, but I hear it all the time from people who listen to the show, and they show up week after week after week. And usually it's, you know, there's four or five people that have negative comments to say about every single show, about every single person that's on, about, you know, their story can't be believed. There's no way that happened. And I'm like, okay, well, you don't have to believe it, right? There's people that have told stories on the show that I'm not sure are altogether true, right? I do my very best to make sure that we vet people and bring them on. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if the story's true or not. It really doesn't. Because if the person believes that they had that experience, that's really all that matters to me. I don't bring anybody on that I don't believe that they believe have had some sort of real experience. You haven't said that it was a Bigfoot that did any of the things that we just talked about. I inferred that several times because that's what it sounds like to me. You just said, I had this experience in the woods and I can't explain it, right?
Right. I mean, everybody's a skeptic until they have an encounter. So
that's exactly right. I have to ask this question, particularly from people from around the UR, because every time I ask this question, I get an answer of some sort. And you may be the exception, not the rule. outside of those crazy experiences that you had in the woods that could be possibly related to a Sasquatch, have you had other weird experiences that you can't explain in or around that area?
Stay tuned for more Sasquatch Odyssey. We'll be right back after these messages.
Well, we did live in a house for 15 years that was haunted. So, I mean, if that accounts for anything.
Well, define haunted. Tell me what kind of experiences were you having in the house?
Okay, so it's kind of a weird story, but me and my wife, we were living with my father-in-law at the time. We were trying to save up our money, you know. We had two kids. Our third one was on the way. So we were living with him for a little while, and we were trying to save up money to buy a house. And we ended up buying a house almost like a matter of feet from his driveway. This house came up for sale. The land joined his land. And I mean, everything was perfect. I mean, it was almost like the house chose us, you know. So we moved in this house, and this house was built in the 1930s. And when we were moving in the house, you know, we took a break from unpacking boxes and all this stuff. And we're sitting around at the dining room table, and we, you know, eating sandwiches or whatever, and, you know, just talking and laughing and excited, you know, the excitement of moving in our first house, you know. And all of a sudden, the whole house felt like it dropped, like boom, the whole house. And like I said, my father-in-law lives about a quarter of a mile back behind us through the woods from where that house was. And my wife got on the phone, called him, said, "Hey, did you hear that big boom?" He said, "No, I hadn't heard anything." So he was like, "Man, that was odd." So I told her, I said, "When we get through eating, I'll go into the house, you know, make sure nothing's broken, nothing's, you know, no columns are falling under the house, foundation hadn't busted, you know, anything." And so I go under the house. Everything looks good. It wasn't a couple of days later, things started getting moved around in odd places. Like, we were trying to find our car keys one day. We looked toward our house apart and couldn't find them anywhere. Open the closet door. They're laying in the floor, right in the closet door. It's like, you know, who would have put our keys in the closet, you know? So as time goes on, we had one bedroom in the back of the house. It was my oldest daughter's room. And she would sleep in that, you know, she would go to bed at night and she would say, well, to back up, that room would always give you a creepy feeling when you went in there. It was like it was almost like it was enclosed from the rest of the house or something. And it was not a very big bedroom. But she would go in there at night and she would wake up the next day and she would say, "Mom, I can't sleep. Somebody's whispering in my ear all night." And, you know, she's a kid. Maybe she's just dreaming, you know, whatever. And as time went on, things just ramped up more and more. I'll cut to the later years of living in the house. You know, we would come in, like the water would be on, like we'd be standing in the kitchen talking. All of a sudden the water would turn on the sink, the kitchen sink. It would turn on. So we'd cut it off. It'd come back on. We had me and my son, we had started seeing shadows, like looking around the door frames and all this stuff. And my wife had her hair pulled. She'd hear whispering in her ear at night when she was asleep. It's like somebody pull her hair and a little girl would be laughing in her ear, like snickering in her ear. It wasn't our kids, you know, all our kids were asleep. I turned over one night in the bed. I woke up and my wife was just all up against me. We were like sharing one side of the bed, you know. And I woke up and as I turned over to turn my back to her, you know, trying to get some more room. And as I turned over, there was somebody sitting at the end of my bed. I thought, well, that's my daughter, Allison. So I turned over and then, you know, I was like, that was not Allison. I don't know what that was. And I never did open my eyes and never looked again. So I was kind of, you know, I ain't gonna lie, I was kind of scared to look. But we would have when we first moved in the house, I was standing in the bathroom at the back of the house. And I heard the front door open and I heard Daddy. And I stuck my head out of the door and I was like, I'm back here. Nothing. Never heard anything else. So I walked to the front of the house. Nobody's home. They hadn't even got home yet. I had that happen twice. But we would hear voices. We would see dark shadows. It was one I called the 9-foot woman. We had between our dining room and our kitchen, there was like a bar. And whatever it was, looked under the top of that bar, like looking into the dining room. And you could see its head look down and pulled it back. I just kind of called her the 9-foot woman, but but we would see shadows looking around the door frames at us all the time. I mean, it was wild. I wish my wife was here. You know, she could, you know, tell you some of the stories, because I've probably forgot half of them. But, you know, we lived there for 15 years, and it got so bad at one point, my wife went to the preacher and said, I need some anointing oil. And she came home and she walked through the house and prayed and made little crosses over all the door frames in every room in the house. And it pretty much quit. So we went on there for a little while, and all of a sudden it started, you know, ramping up again, getting wild again. We were like, what's going on? You know, it stopped for a while. What's going on? And we had remembered we had went through and painted the house. I guess we painted over all that oil. It all came back. So we ended up selling that house, and we moved to Asheboro, which is about 30 miles from Troy, closer towards Greensboro, North Carolina. And my daughter and her husband had bought the house. You know, my daughter lived there all, you know, most of her life. So she knew what was going on. And so she wasn't scared. She said, yeah, we'll buy it. So we cut them a good deal on it, you know, for their first house. And she called me one day. She said, Dad, you're not going to believe what happened. I said, well, you know, what happened? She said, I woke up this morning. She said, Jerry was already going to work. She said, and I went in the kitchen and the coffee maker sitting in the middle of the floor. She said, I already called him. He said he didn't move it. So, I mean, it wasn't really anything that was malicious. You know, there was no injuries, nothing like that. It was just like playfulness. Like, I mean, we weren't scared. It was just like, having fun. I don't know. It was just odd.
Well, I've definitely had a different experience in haunted houses when I was a kid. I've told my story a couple of times on the show. I won't get into that, but I'm glad that it wasn't anything that was malevolent, because it's bad enough when you have anything like that going on in your house, because there's just that unsettled feeling that you have of what's going to happen next, you know, or is it going to get to the point where it's not just moving keys and something else bad happens or whatever the case may be. I really appreciate you sharing that, man. I know that was probably not the easiest thing in the world, but I'm really glad you came on and shared your stories, man. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Well, I appreciate it, Brian. Like I said, I appreciate you having a place where we can come and tell our stories and you know, without feeling like somebody's going to judge you, which at this point, you know, it doesn't bother me. I'm old. I don't, that stuff doesn't bother me anymore, what people think of me.
Absolutely, man. I'm glad you came on. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Brian. They say you don't got to go home, but you can't stay. We'll be right back.